Hi, everybody, and welcome to Humanity First here at BAMSI. Big week here at BAMSI. I find myself saying that a lot recently because there's so much going on. We have Pam Verklin here, who is our VP of Communications, Development, and Philanthropy. I'm sure I've got the wrong way around. In fact, I just rotate them, to be honest with you. I have so many roles. But hi, Pam. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for having me here today.
Good. Great to have you on. So this week, we are having an event, which is our Living Proof, a conversation about vaccine hesitancy, this Friday. Looking forward to it. We've got a panel of experts. And thought we'd kick off the show by talking about that a little bit. And first of all, I guess the question is, why is BAMSI doing this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we were fortunate enough to partner with South Coast Community Foundation, who awarded us grant funds to, you know, help the community overcome their hesitancies when it came to vaccines. You know, there's been a lot of conversation about it, and there's a lot of fact versus opinion. And they really wanted to partner with our organization because Brockton was one of the most heavily hit communities in Massachusetts when it came to COVID-19. And accessing the vaccine in Brockton was also becoming a challenge that they noticed. So by partnering with them, we've been able to put on, you know, an array of conversations, do some marketing around the vaccine, and try to really educate individuals about what the vaccine is as opposed to what we think it is.
Yeah. I'm really impressed with that funder because they've done so much with us. And just, a second to give them credit for what they've done in the community.
Yeah, they've been a great partner. Prior to receiving the funds for this initiative itself, they also came forward with funding for COVID-19 individuals who were facing hardships. And some of the stories that we've heard just from individuals around that have been just completely heartwarming. Everything from individuals who had children that needed desks to do homeschooling, individuals who needed tires on their car just to get to doctor's appointments so that they could avoid getting COVID. You know, a lot of great stories coming out of that, but also a lot of recognition of a lot of disparity.
Yeah, indeed. And I'm so proud of our helpline and obviously that money and also, by the way, of your ability to go and sort of beat the bushes and get that money. But that money has been a real help. I mean, it's a real tactile manifestation of how we can help through Helpline. They've done a wonderful job over the last year, haven't they?
No, they've done a great job. And, you know, they've intercepted a lot of individuals who have just faced some seriously challenging times and individuals who thought that they never would be in the positions that they are in. So that is why these funds were so imperative for us to receive and be able to help our community out.
Yeah. So let's go back to the panel. You know, because there's still an awful lot of hesitancy out there. It is interesting because there's been a dialogue going on the Facebook chat, you know, and there's been a lot of representation of people who have certainly different opinions than we do around vaccine hesitancy. The highlights are that it's propaganda, and then there's other information that's posted, which to me anyway doesn't come from a credible source. And then you think about the money that's coming from government organizations, NGOs, in support of getting people to be vaccinated. I believe we're on the right side of history here in terms of what's going on at the moment. And the panel, I think, is going to really examine the facts and examine the hesitancy. And because vaccine hesitancy isn't just one thing, right? It's a number of things. I mean, what kind of things are people saying about that make them hesitant?
Well, I think it's a cultural experience, you know, a historical experience. You know, there's vaccines that are mandated for our children throughout schools that are required. So, you know, I think that this is a bigger conversation around, you know, what's coming down the pipeline with Pfizer and FDA approval for ages 5 through 12. You know, I think that people are entitled to their opinions, but really understanding the facts. And, you know, it's that saying of there's three sides to every story. There's your side, their side, and the truth. Mm-hmm. And I think we're just really trying to make sure that we get the truth out there mm-hmm. so that if there is someone who is on the fence about getting vaccinated, that they have the facts and are empowered by those to kind of make that decision themselves.
Yeah. And I would say a lot of that information is on BAMSI.org/vaccines.
That is correct. Videos out there. There's, you know, you can also go to the Mass MassGov site. They have a lot of information, and even the CDC has a lot of information. Those are going to be your most reliable sources when it comes to these conversations.
I really hope that the conversation is going to be about public health, really, because I often think that the best way to describe this is to look at public health best practice. And really, I think what's happening with the CDC and Dr. Fauci and the Biden administration is that they're really looking at frameworks of public health which say, you know, get the message out there, encourage, but also carry a stick. And I think we're beginning to move into that. One thing that is very controversial at the moment, listening to the radio this morning, is that a lot of the state police are, or some of the state police, should I say, are saying that they'll quit. A lot of healthcare providers are saying that once the vaccines are made mandatory, which really was after full CDC FDA approval, open the door for that. But we're seeing a lot of resistance to that. But the public health model talks about encouraging and pushing people toward what is best, not only for themselves, and in this particular public health issue, it is for themselves, but for the entire population. We have to think collectively about this.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that you bring that up. Well, not Massachusetts-based, it's Rhode Island is really facing a huge challenge. They're, I think, the second in the country right now for staffing shortages when it comes to nursing and medical professionals. And so their mandate, I believe, is going into effect on Friday, October 1st, and it'll be interesting to see how many people actually walk out of the hospital due to the vaccination mandates. So I think, you know, as a public health perspective, getting vaccinated is also making sure that, you know, if you fall and get hurt and get in a car accident, that you have that healthcare provider there at the emergency room. So it's such a bigger issue than just actually going out and getting that vaccine.
That's right. And I often think about the having lived in New Hampshire and lived in Massachusetts, two different, very different states, that tell different stories. And I think about the motorcycles and helmets. You know, you'll go up to New Hampshire and people aren't wearing helmets, and it's live free or die up there. But the death rate and the casualty rate for people on motorcycles is way higher than it is here. Those are the facts. If you wear a skid lid, then you're more likely to survive an accident. And that was a strange expression,
wasn't it? I think that's
an English one. But we're applying the same principles here. It's for the good of everyone. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that pushback, because what we have is a panel of experts. We have a couple of docs who are going to put the medical side of it and the public health side of it. We have Pebbles, of course, who is coming on and really importantly is going to give a cultural perspective around hesitancy. Our own Christiana Odonzi, our nursing director, is going to be on, and it's just going to be a great conversation, I think, and hopefully we'll get a lot of people live streaming on Facebook as we go. We'll be starting at 6 o'clock on Friday. But let's switch gears a little bit, if I can, because Pam, I don't know if you're new enough to be called the new anymore. That might have worn off a little bit.
There's
probably been a few people, right? But you've been here a few months. You're getting a lie of the land a little bit. And we talk a lot about BAMSI's impact in the community and how BAMSI has been this really well-kept secret for the last 40 years, doing remarkable work both in the congregate care residential side, but also growing the community side, as we were talking before about the helpline. The helpline is just such a good example of an organization that is embedded in a community like Brockton. And the mayor is the first person, the first organization that he thinks about is BAMSI when it comes to, can you help us with this? We love that, and that's what we want to be. But we also want to get the message out. You know, we are competing with many other nonprofit agencies, all of whom are great, by the way. Well, most of them are great. But those people are looking for employees as well. And we need to tell a story. And I know that's part of what you're doing at the moment in terms of our communications and marketing. How do we get inspirational about the story that we tell people about what we do here?
So I think one thing to share is that you can't just come into BAMSI and know in 5 minutes what this organization does. And so one of the really important aspects of my job that I've kind of done is almost gone on a road show, I would say. You know, every week I'm looking at my calendar and really seeing where can I go and what can I learn. And I've had the opportunity to go into some of our residential programs and see firsthand individuals who have experienced, you know, ATV accidents, something that can happen in the flash of a light. You know, one day you're walking, playing football, and the next day, you know, you're living in one of our programs. Mm-hmm. And it's really heartwarming to see the care that goes into those individuals, as well as, you know, there's day programs that these same individuals are brought to, and they get to do arts and crafts and kind of interact with one another. But then on the behavioral health side, I've also gone into day programs there, and same thing. You see some remarkable individuals who really just want to, you know, get out and communicate with other individuals. You know, we had a story feature about David, one of our individuals here at BAMSI, and, you know, I got to spend some time with him at his day program, and he took me out to his garden and showed me the garden, and, you know, and I think that that's the best way that you can tell a story is really embed yourself in an organization that you work for and really get to know the people we serve, the people that work in the programs. And that's really what I've been trying to do. You know, obviously with COVID kind of spiking up again a little bit, there's been some restrictions around what programs I can go to, but it is my hope to get out to all of them and really make those connections with everybody to be able to come back and really tell that story to people who want to come work here, and to people who want to make donations to BAMSI, and people who really want to understand the work that we do. So it's really about building those relationships.
Yeah, and I think it's about, it's, somebody once said to me, it's stories and stats. You know, people want to hear stories, and then funders also want to hear stats. That is, well, okay, I donated to this organization. Where did that money go and how did it help? And, you know, I often think about that's really important that our quality folks run dashboards that say the interventions that we are providing people and to our funders as well, you know, here is the improvement in those people's lives as defined by enhancing life experience. But I think, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I think it's the stories. I think when you hear a story about how we have helped somebody, we don't do it for them, you know, we work with, you know, and not for, but the stories about people who maximize their potential, who have done that against all odds, is the bit that inspires me. And I know that you're constantly looking for those stories, and they're under every rock in this organization.
I mean, on my road show per se, I've dug up quite a few stories, some, you know, of which I've left, you know, residential programming and called my spouse and said, wow, like, this was impactful. And so I think that, you know, those stories are really what's going to draw in some attention. But you are right. Statistics, some people are very number driven and they like to see the number of people that we've served. And typically that's around 50 to 60,000 people per fiscal year that we're serving. You know, and right now we're working on our annual report, which will have a lot of those statistics. But I think that you'll also see some lower number statistics that are really impactful that will show how people have grown. So I think our annual report is going to look a little different than what it's previously looked like. But I'm really excited to be able to kind of do both of those spectrums is, you know, tell the stories in our annual report, but also be able to share all those statistics. So we're kind of sharing both.
That's right. And I did hear that your spouse actually did call me and say, there's so many stories. Could you ask Pam to stop calling me? No, I'm just kidding.
You know, my husband works in fundraising, too, so I doubt that.
Yeah, but that's it. And when we're looking, you know, there are so many people out there who are, I remember being in this position myself, you know, 21, 22, 23, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do the rest of my life? And it's oftentimes that people hear those stories or somebody says to them, orientation this week, four people were beginning work out of that 12 orientation group because BAMSI employees have said, you know what, you should come and work at BAMSI because. And they told those stories. They also told stories of good benefits, of good time off, all of those things. but it is we make a difference here. And we work with people intensely. We get to know them. And here's the inspirational bit. And then the story comes about how people's lives have changed or how the guardians of some people write letters to us and just say, I cannot tell you. Even when we lose somebody to a pre-existing condition, oftentimes I'll have guardians call up and say, the care was exemplary and you enhanced the life of our loved one. And that's a moving moment for me.
Yeah, and I, you know, recently we've started to receive a lot of memorial gifts in lieu of flowers. So that's been a huge avenue that we've been going down and seeing a lot of return on. And, you know, it's heartwarming because these are the families of individuals that we work with. And so to see that they want to continue their legacy by giving back to BAMC is really invaluable.
There's nothing quite like that. I always say there's nothing quite like about somebody who leaves BAMC and comes back because they know it's where they want to live, and also that somebody will give and give more. So, Pam, thank you. It's so good to have you with us,
you.
Both at BAMC and on the show. And there's so much more to talk about, but I think we've run out of time. So thank you very much.
Thank you.